Here I am. Hi, everybody. Gordon Michael Scallion is here. Let me give him a little plug. GMS has been a futurist now for 25 years. He's the author of Notes from the Cosmos, a futurist's insights into the world of dream prophecy and intuition. Normally, that's a $16.95 plus shipping type book. Now, available for you listening to this program for only a shipping and handling fee of $6.95. Now that's saving $10. Only $6.95, available now at earthchanges.com, or there is a phone number. And we'll find out when it's manned. Go ahead and jot it down. It is area code 603-256-6520. Once again, 603-256-6520. We'll be right back. Once again, Gordon Michael Scallion. Gordon, that phone number I gave, 603-256-6520, is that 24 hours or during the day or what?
It's 9 to 4, East Coast time.
Okay.
But there is a message center that can at least take phone numbers if they want to call.
Okay, and they'll return calls.
Yes.
Okay. The Middle East and possession, is it possible that an entire region or entire peoples could, in essence, be possessed?
I believe so. We spoke earlier about the fact that there can be a group possession, and individuals have karma, individual karmas. We all do, mm-hmm. But there's also a karma of a city or a town, and there's a karma of a nation. And so if we look at the Middle East, because, the U.S. is new, we're a couple centuries old. But if we look at the Middle East, we're talking about, thousands of years, probably tens of thousands of years. And so there's a lot of karma there. And that karma can create, a group dynamic. And so you already have the mechanism there to draw in very large negative forces from the astral planes. And so I clearly believe that the Middle East is possessed. It's the only way I can't make it any simpler than that. It's in a state of possession, and it's being fed. The negativity in the astral planes is just feeding it back and forth. Okay. And there's, in order to cleanse that, you have to use one of the basic elements. It's got to be fire or water. It requires a cleansing, just like when a priest, for example, works with possession. They'll use holy water, the act of purification with water. Same thing is with the Middle East. It'll be fire, which we know what that represents, or water, which could be, flooding.
Do you think there's any possibility that the Middle East will just somehow calm down, or is there going to have to be fire before there's peace? In other words, it's headed toward an inevitable catastrophe.
I think we're in the middle of, let me change that. I think we're in the end of a cycle where, biblical and non-biblical prophecies are all coming into play. And so, there's always that hope. There's always that hope that some master who's alive and walking on this earth, goes in and Gandhi type person and somehow makes this thing all better. I don't see that, and I really would like to see that. I'm hopeful, but it looks like it can only head one way, and that is a purification.
Purification, yeah. Coming back to the individual level for a moment, and possession, what kind of effect do drugs and alcohol have? On the one hand, you would think they would dull a person's ability to sense that sort of thing at all, or does that open doors?
It opens doors when, our bodies and our brains and our minds are always on alert. We always have these senses that are always on alert. We may not acknowledge our sixth sense so much, though today intuition is becoming, more acknowledged. But it's a natural function of us. We have these. Now, when we deaden those through alcohol, obsessions of some type, or drugs, then we break down those protective barriers that are natural to us. Mm-hmm. And it's that breaking down those barriers that allows the crack to widen a bit. Like I said, it doesn't happen, you know, instantly, though it can. It usually occurs over a period of time and builds and builds and builds.
Hmm. And then all of a sudden you're seeing a report on television of somebody who took a rifle and offed a bunch of people and then himself, and the inevitable interviews with people who say, gee, you know, he was such a loner and such a nice guy and last guy in the world you'd expect to do something like that.
You know, it's becoming all too common, you know, and of course, you know, things now are much different than they were in the 50s or 60s. You know, here we have this instant communications network of television, satellite media, the internet. And so, you know, it brings to focus all these things that are going on all the time. And we have 24-hour news stations. We have multiple news stations. So it's hard to turn TV on without being exposed to things that are going on in the world.
That's right.
And those things, the pattern is showing that it's increasing. And so, you know, we can look at why is it increasing? You know, what's changing in society to make this increase?
Well, first, Gordon, is it really increasing? You mentioned yourself. We've got radio and television, satellite. We've got instant communications. The internet is there. There's nothing you can't find out nearly immediately. So there's the we're hearing a lot more than we used to aspect of this. To balance against, there is much more of this going on.
There is, but what we're seeing, I mean, even if we didn't have the 24-hour news stations, we only had newspapers, for example, you know, we go back to the 50s time period, you didn't see the kind of things that are happening now. You didn't see the Columbine kind of stuff. I mean, that possession took a different path back then. It was more individual, and it had more to do with different elements. Possession existed. I mean, it's always existed. Anytime, you know, we fall from our center place, you know, we're susceptible to influences. Now, these influences are not always possession. These can be very subtle influences, in which so we make what we consider stupid decisions, or we do things that we say, why did I do that?
Right.
These are all the effects that are going on in the invisible world, you know, the astral plane. But the events have always been going on, but the acceleration now is that we see it involving a lot more damage, a lot more people. You know, if we look at, you know, Jamestown, and we look at Tate, Sharon Tate, you know, we look at that time period of possession, you know, where charismatic leaders drew groups to them and then were able to literally possess the whole group. You know, one individual was able to do that. And so we see that. So now, you know, when I look at television in places, I look at the leaders. I see, you know, what is the leader like? Because that will tell us a lot about the society of that particular country, because the body of the country elected those leaders. So, you know, you have to look at it and say, okay, you know, what's the relationship there? And where might this go based on the leader's philosophy?
How possible is it, Gordon, that this is self-perpetuating? In other words, I can read 5 minutes of Associated Press News, and it's nearly all negative. They don't report good news.
Mm-hmm.
Save one story about the Super Bowl, if you consider that good news.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is negative. It's about how many died in Iraq. It's about who picked up a gun and started killing a bunch of people, or whatever other catastrophe is going on. Now, I've been doing a lot of work in consciousness lately, a lot of shows on consciousness, and I've begun to wonder whether this is all self-perpetuating, and the more negativity that we feed to the general public, the more negativity is allowed to come in.
I think that's true. I think that's very true. And I think that, you know, two things happen. I mean, either you get tired of watching all this stuff and you turn the channels off, you don't watch them anymore.
Yes. Yes.
You know, or you become obsessed with what's going on. Now, part of that may be because if we are focusing on somewhere else, if our thoughts are, you know, somewhere else. It takes us away from working on ourselves. You know, we see the misfortune someplace else, and we can feel the compassion of that. But it may literally keep us from working on our own issues, what our own personal consciousness is, and right. how that's going to develop. You know, it's in the 50s we had, you know, typically we had a family. We had two parents. One was working, one wasn't. You know, there was a family unit, and families sat down at dinner. And so one of the things that I write about in my book and elsewhere is that how important the nightly dinner and the breakfast are. And and that kind of brings together and bonds the family. Well, now, you know, it's hard. You know, both parents, just to pay bills, have to work full-time and then some. And so the kids tend to not get the same kind of guidance and treatment and interaction. And so that opens another door for them to you know, to just drift away.
Well, I just got back from about 8 months in the Philippines, Gordon. And the one thing I noticed, above all, the Philippines is about 87% Catholic, something like that. And they're real Catholics, capital C. And they're very, very, it's kind of like the 1950s or even earlier in the U.S. They are so utterly family-oriented. I don't have words to describe how very different it is. They are objectively, just horrible poverty there all over the Philippines, but they're happy, Gordon. They're happy people, and they're utterly family-oriented people. And it hits you right in the face when you get there. Now, there are a lot of problems in the Philippines, but not the kind of problems that we have here.
You know, there are countries that I have been to as well. Like I did a lot of work in the Yucatan, and exploring the Maya and meeting with the people and going to the little homes and actually spending time with them.
Right.
And they're loving and you know, by our standards we say they're poor, but
oh, yes.
but they don't understand poor
no.
at all. I mean,
no, they don't.
They're happy and you know, their family unit is there. And you know, and then so the first time I went was in the early 80s, and then when I went in the 90s again, I started seeing satellite dishes popping up.
That's right.
In these little shanties.
Sure.
And then when I went in mid 90s, you know, things began to change. And I started seeing a change in the actual the culture as modernizations kind of took hold, and I started mm-hmm. seeing some changes.
Oh,
so,
yes.
You know, the faith has a lot to do with the community, too. You know, here in the United States, you know, we've seen some really turnarounds in religion. You know, we've seen some declines. We've seen problems. And it's smaller. You know, when I used to go to Sunday services, you know, it was packed, always packed. And, you know, now it's very few people there. And it doesn't mean that the faith in religion has gone away or that it's not valid. It's just that our focus and our attention, you know, has gone someplace else. So the correlation between smaller communities that are family-based with some kind of a faith structure, they tend to do better.
Well, one interesting thing I noted was that here in the United States, we separate the state and religion.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have great arguments about it, and we have crosses removed from government buildings and that sort of thing. In the Philippines, when Christmas comes, for example, Gordon, the government buildings are the first decorated. All the light poles and on the highways, they're all the first decorated by the government. And so instead of a separation of government and religion, you have a government virtually run by religion. And I'm not necessarily promoting that right now. I'm just telling you that's the way it is. And it results in a very different culture.
Yeah, the integration is a good word that I've seen in those, and I think it's what you're describing in the Philippines is this integration. The leaders who are elected come from the same family group. That's why I was saying if you look at the leaders, and see who they are, then you can understand better about the society and its people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here in the United States, we're polarized. We're highly polarized and have been. And so, you know, we're looking at something from two sides of an issue. And so, we'll blame our leader or leaders on one side, and the other side we'll kind of support it. And that duality, you know, keeps, I think, a society from really nurturing and moving forward.
Do you think it's fair to say, Gordon, that the separation of church and state in America has, to some degree, succeeded?
It definitely has. It has, and it has, and probably rightfully so. You know, we have to go back and look at how our country was founded and how the Constitution came into being and all the problems that went on with it at that time. Mm-hmm. But I think it has been a good thing. I think, you know, true faith and religion, I think, is community based. You know, we look at the national organizations, you know, the huge ones like Judaism and Catholicism, and the billions and millions of members of Islam and all the other groups. But really, you know, good working faith based is a community. You know, I saw that on television with the tornado that hit, the Palm Beach Gardens area.
And I
saw the church that just, you know, was designed to handle 150 mile an hour winds, and it just rolled it up into a ball.
That's right.
And, you know, in the loss. And I saw how those people in that community reacted. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to get through this fine and they're going to be better for it. And I think it's
well, I think that's true. But those tornadoes are a sign of something that you predicted years ago, I'm afraid.
Yeah, the weather-related predictions have been right on. The mega earth change things have not been right on. But the weather stuff just continues to roll on. Like this year is, I call this the year of the wind, and also it's going to be the year of drought. We're going to see both these elements play out all year long. So we're going to see, you know, more of this winds, especially in areas that where it hasn't occurred before. We're going to see it in strange areas of tornadoes. They're going to fire up. You know, this one here was only an F1, I think, or F2. I'm not sure, but we're going to see things that are going to go off scale. We're going to see F4, F5 kind of stuff that's going to go on.
And maybe the weather people agree with you. They just recalibrated the Fujita scale for tornadoes. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of year is coming. I think they too believe it's going to be a very, very bad year. Is there a way at the individual level, Gordon, to protect oneself against what's all around us, apparently?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, really a great question. Let me tell you the research work that I've done, and this comes from about 10 years of research, as parents would, you know, bring their kids to me because they felt that there was something was influencing them. And typically they come in to me thinking that it's a ghost. It's some kind of a spirit.
Sure.
And that's how it starts. And then as I look into it, I see that there's outside influences that indeed it's kind of a spirit, but it's really a, you know, an astral, a borderlands kind of thing. And so, you know, I tried communications. I tried working with having them, you know, change the positions of their bed, how they sleep at night, I found made a difference. I found if you can sleep about 50, here, at least here in this hemisphere, if you can sleep about 15 degrees east of magnetic north. So you get a compass and you put a compass down by your bed. You look at 15 degrees east of it and get the head of your bed pointing that direction.
All right, hold it right there. We're at a break point. This is a perfect place to pick up, and a lot of people want to hear about exactly this, the protection part, when we get back. Something a very little bit different than we normally discuss with Lord Michael Scallion. Earth changes is where we normally go, but tonight, no. For the most part, we're talking about possession, and at the moment, the protection part of possession. Yes, it's all out there. I think we can all feel it. We know at some level that these influences are around us. Believe me, I'm considering very carefully what I do here on Coast to Coast AM and how that may or may not contribute to some sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. I have that under active consideration. GMS back in a moment. Okay, Gordon, you were beginning to talk about protection and the positioning of a bed. Nevada, interestingly, in Fernley, Nevada, somebody named Nevada, says when Edgar Cayce was preparing to do or go into one of his trance-like readings, he always made sure that he was lying down with his bed oriented north-south, his head to the north. True?
I don't know that. I've never heard that. But I do know in many traditions, such as Native American, and I have many, many friends, many elders who subscribe to the same principle. The interesting thing is that, when I started, in the early 80s, and I was doing research work on magnetism and magnetic motors and looking for the alternative energy thing of the future, I found that, being dead on magnetic north wasn't doing it, for my meditations and stuff. So I shifted a few degrees, like 5 degrees, and then it just jumped right up. And I said, wow, this really works. But interestingly enough, and since that time, it's now, 15 degrees. And so the assumption I've made is that the magnetic poles have shifted in some areas, maybe not in totality, but there's certain eddies, we'll say, where it's shifted. And so, I've tried this in California, I've tried it in Colorado, and I've tried it obviously in the East Coast. And 15 degrees seems to do it. And
so, so you're recommending people get 15 degrees off magnetic north?
Yes, to the east of it.
To the east, okay.
It would be 15 degrees as a compass would show. Once you align your compass north, magnetic north, and then the 15 degree mark, if you can do that. Now, obviously, not everybody can do it, but at least you can try it. You can do an experiment with it, and the results are kind of interesting. The first result that I saw was that I would remember every day. I remember at least two or three dreams, but when I did this exercise, it jumped up to 5 and 6. The next day, and it's been that way ever since. So my dream journals, are kind of chock full now, and I equated directly to the magnetic positioning. Now I've also found that it aids in healing too. I found that like something like a cold is shorter. The duration is shorter. And I've also found that my memory is better. And physically, I felt better. So there's something that's going on there. And my sense is that when we're in the stream of the magnetic field and we're aligned properly, that we're getting this amplification of our body. So our body's natural immune system and healing abilities, the magnetic body, it helps us in many, many ways. And, of course, one of the ways I found is that by doing this, the subtle energies that were affecting us go away, such as what I call prepossession. This is when there's just very slight influences that are going on.
Right.
But it can bring it back into balance. So that was one method.
That is really interesting. Really interesting. And you say you can feel the effect of this. You won't it won't be so subtle that you won't know.
Most people that have tried this say that, I've given them a list of things to look for. I said one of the things you want to look for is, has your dream states changed at all? Do you become lucid occasionally in your dreams? I've had people who've told me they have never dreamt in their life.
Huh.
And then all of a sudden they try this and they say, my God, that's what dreams are? It was like a whole new language to them. They said, it doesn't make any sense, that I was flying or I was doing this. And I said, well, that's the language of dreams. It's a whole different language, and you need to learn the language to understand it.
Well, we've got enough people out there right now that I'm sure enough of them will give this a try. It's 15 degrees east of magnetic north.
In this hemisphere, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got a compass, folks. You can actually, if you're able to position your bed, give it a try for a couple of weeks or a month and report back to me. And I'd be very, very curious myself. I think we're connected to the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native Americans think that. My intuition tells me it is true. So this really is worth a try. And you think, in addition, there's some protection from some of the more negative influences?
I think so. You know, it's kind of like a nightly tune-up. You know, we've got a 6 to 8 hour repair cycle. You know, mm-hmm. while we're sleeping, our parts of our body are being repaired. You know, the lower trunk in particular is being repaired as we sleep.
Sure.
And so that repair also works in our brain, you know, in our mind. And so we get the opportunity to allow. Now, we've talked about the negativity of the astral realms and those forces, but there's also at higher levels beyond the lower astral planes. We get up to the intuitive planes and the causal planes. I said there's seven planes. Well, the higher the planes, the more clear those souls are. And to advance to a higher level, you have to be in service, literally. And so and many of those come as dream guides or guides, or they'll come just to influence others. And so it's a positive force. And so as you clean up your body through this magnetic exercise, you open yourself up to dream guides. And a lot of people have reported to me that what they're experiencing is the dreams pop up, and then all of a sudden they experience this lucid experience where they actually are listening to somebody talk to them, you know, which could be their dream self, obviously, but it also could be something else. It could be a positive force. But I've noticed that the magnetic field in the proper way is a deterrent to negative forces. So it's again, like you said, it's worth trying. It's a harmless kind of thing to try. That's just one of the methods that I found. There's at least two other methods that people can do to stem off any of these negative influences.
We are listening.
One of the things I tried after the magnetic field, and this came about in the about the mid to later 80s, is I started working with, I started seeing auras in 80, and so, but I didn't understand them or what they were. And then as I went further into the 80s, they became more pronounced, and I began to kind of understand what the colors meant. And how our emotions were constantly changing this rainbow around us.
Okay.
And then by accident, I went to a meditation. There was a nightly gathering, and it was a meditation room. And I went to it just to experience it. And they were playing a specific type of music called Baroque music. And I listened to that, and as I listened to that music, when they started playing it, I watched all of the auras in the room in unison start to harmonize color-wise with the music.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And I said, wow. And so, you know, I talked to the people afterwards, and I said, well, how did you happen to come across this music? And they said, well, it's, you know, we follow music that was produced by Bach, and that we think he was a master, and they went on to this whole New Age thing at the time, and I didn't understand what they were talking about, but I didn't notice the change in the music. So I went and I got as much of that music as I could, mm-hmm. and played it on myself, and then as people would come, I would do that. And then I noticed that when people came to me who I thought were, you know, in a state that they could become possessed in the future, that they were definitely in being influenced by an outside force. And so I would put this music on in the background, very, 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 you can barely hear it, but it was playing. And they'd come in and they would be agitated. And so when the music played, they would be agitated. And then after about maybe 15 minutes of us just talking, you know, the music still playing, that agitation would go away. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'd see them again in a month, and they'd come back in a month, and they would come in again. They'd be agitated a little bit, but after about three times, the agitation went away, and then the parents said that they thought that whatever he was going through, he's now through it, or she's gone through it, and she's kind of back to normal again. So It appears that that magnetism is a way of doing it, and it appears that music, specific types of music, Baroque in particular music, can be a not so much of a protection, but it can help, you know, clean up your aura, so to speak. And by cleaning up your aura, you're actually providing the protection.
You know, that makes so much sense. It really does. Music. So position of the bed, 15 degrees east of north, and Baroque music. And while a lot of people no doubt will chuckle about all of this, I'm not. I know the effect music has. And while we're on that subject, there's a lot of different kinds of music, aren't there? And if Baroque has that effect, then I wonder what rap does to people.
I have not had that much experience with that. I have had experience with a very loud drum kind of music. You know, when there was the era of Kiss and other groups out there, when you had when the heavy metal sound was out and it was large, I noticed an incredible increase in my correspondence and people visiting me, with parents in particular, talking about their kids, you know, and then the whole thing about, you know, rock and roll is evil and so forth and so on. And basically what it is that music, you know, has a series of vibrations. And the way I look at it is that our body is like a tuning fork. And it's a multiple faceted tuning fork, granted. But ideally, if we're perfectly in harmony with Earth and Sun and nature, if we're in harmony, our tuning fork is just vibrating perfectly. And when it's not vibrating perfectly, then things start to happen. And we'll see that effect in one of our major endocrine system glands. One of our organs will start to react to it. So it makes sense to me if I induce another vibration, whether that vibration be magnetism or color or sound, that our bodies are going to react. They're going to either react in a positive way or a negative way. Or hopefully it could be a neutral way, which would be good if we're looking for our perfect tuning fork.
I guess so. No, all of that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And it's worked for you, and you have also seen it work for others.
I have. This is we have now about 25 years of work and research doing this type of work. I mean, most of my work is not earth changes. Earth changes is a small part of my work, and from the beginning it has been a small part. Most of it has been about consciousness and how consciousness functions in metaphysics, and how metaphysics forms reality and how it forms what society is and what society will be doing. So it's been studying all of that and then seeing how we can interact with it and how we can bring about positive changes in consciousness.
Okay. Gordon, you did predict some extremely ominous earth changes that did not occur, at least yet. And, you know, what you said did affect many, many people, scared the hell out of a lot of people. And I wonder if you have any thoughts, reflections on how you missed it, whether you misread it, whether it was something that was one of those things that could have happened and did not, or now that you reflect on it, what do you think?
You know, I clearly missed it. And, you know, as I started seeing those visions and sharing those visions in the 80s and then into the 90s, you know, we saw a pattern of things, and I was given a whole series of events that would have occurred, which was like Northridge and different things in Mount St. Helens, and so, you know, that confidence level was that these things have happened that I've, you know, put in print would happen, and they did happen, and so it looked like the pattern was moving towards this time period, and unfortunately, you know, it's hard to pinpoint a date, but the pressure at that time for me was that from everybody was to, especially television, was to bracket a time period, you know. And I said, well, you know, the warning signs are here, and so the next warning sign probably will be that we're going to see a splitting of the United States. And so it was a case of just missing the date. I don't at all believe that it is gone away. You know, that event is there. There's too many people who have similar visions of that.
That's quite true.
It wasn't just me. I may have been the first one out there, one of the first ones out there. But there were many people, and we don't know each other and didn't communicate with each other, but yet we were seeing the same thing.
So you don't think it's gone away? You think you just missed the timeline?
I just did not understand the timeline. I based it on things that would happen. I had a whole series of events that were going to happen, and we published those events, and those events happened. And so it led me to believe that, well, once these events occur, then this probably will occur.
Right.
And it just didn't. I mean, the first thing that was supposed to happen was a tear in the west coast of the United States and a fracture line. And so we did have a rift. We had a 44-mile-hour tear exactly on that line, but it didn't go all the way. It was just a small portion of it. So, you know, it was a major miss on a forecast.
Okay. Remote viewers do virtually the same thing, Gordon. They take one event and say, well, I can see that when this event occurs, this following event that I'm forecasting is going to occur rather soon. And as many times as not, they miss the timeline.
It's not an uncommon thing. You know, it's easier to predict things that deal with people than it is to deal with, you know,
yeah,
planetary things. You know, like, you know, I can predict, you know, when oil was, you know, $23, you know, I could predict, you know, within a couple of months of when it was going to be 50, you know, and things like that were easier to do. Easier to look at that kind of a consciousness.
All right. With that statement, then let's jump ahead to the economy. Here we are in 2007, and everybody's very, very unsure about where our economy is headed. I'm one of those. Where do you think?
Well, this year, I predicted that would be the beginning of the year. This is the year we're going to start to see a decline in the economy. And the decline is due to a couple of major factors. One factor is the extreme personal debt that people have, you know, credit card and auto loan. That number is choking a horse now. And there's just no, and then equity loans were tapped out. And so those numbers, there's no way those numbers could be paid back, which means that either the banks are going to have to foreclose on everything or start writing that debt off. If there is an economic slowdown, which I see coming, that will affect employment, then, you know, if people can't make their monthly payments on things, we start to see this slide. So this year, you know, we'll begin it. You know, one of the benchmarks I think to watch out for is gold at the $800 mark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a signal that the decline has started. Now, supposedly, if you listen to the government reports, you know, we have no inflation now. Unemployment is low. Things are looking really rosy. And I don't see that picture at all. Because I know just when I go out and the normal services that I buy and use, they have escalated so much in the past year.
They certainly have. As a matter of fact, I got quite a shock price-wise when I came back, and I'd only been gone for 8 months to the Philippines. When I got back, I went, wow. A number of things, including the price of oil, had just gone through the roof. Everybody here got it a little dose at a time. I got it all at once when I got back. And speaking of back, we'll get you on the phone with Gordon Michael Scallion coming next.